Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien, recording tonight remotely from my medical office in Dedham, Massachusetts. Joining me, as always, the CEO and hedge better, new dad, yeah. Justin Fine. What is going on, Justin, my friend? It has been a while since we talked. How you doing, my friend? You've had some big changes.
It's been a while. A lot of big changes. Not much sleep going on, but you know what? All good stuff. Very excited. He's doing great. Almost 3 weeks. The time is flying. I gotta say, it's all one big blur, but you know what? I'm loving dad life. Wife's recovering well. Can't ask for much more, man.
All you can ask for is the health. That's it. Like, yeah. It is. I mean, I'm a doctor. I've been through it 4 times now, as you know. And like, let me tell you something. It is no less anxiety provoking for me because I'm a medical person. In fact, it might be more so. But I literally think I almost fainted all 4 of the pregnancies we had. It is a tough experience to go through. There is nothing. It can be someone else's family and you see it, and that's one thing. But when it's your wife and your kid being born, it is just a totally different experience.
Totally, totally different ball game. Again, you know, you got friends, family, lots of people that you know that have kids. You're around babies your whole life, but then to go through it yourself, it's just like you're starting from scratch. It's a totally, totally new experience.
110%. We'll enjoy every step. We're here not to talk about dad life, but we're here to talk about the NFL and football. This is the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. We have an awesome episode planned tonight. There is so much. It's the off season, right? It should be not a busy time, but it is a busy time. We have so much to talk about. Terrific episode planned. We're going to get into this draft and what the Patriots did. We're going to talk about the Mike Vrabel situation because we haven't even hit on that yet. We haven't had the chance to since we last recorded. That's how long ago it's been since we recorded, because this thing has been going on for so long. And then we're going to go around the league. We're going to talk about some of the things I think that we saw around the league in the draft on Sunday and some of the other teams. But before we get into any of that, I just want to start with this, Justin. Free agency is over. The draft is over. Schedule is going to come out in a few weeks. Yep. Mini camp is right around the corner. Let me just say that, like, and I think you might disagree with me on this based on our last episode, but I'm just going to take like the 10,000 foot view of this whole thing and say, I like what they did this offseason. I really like what the Patriots did. I like the way they approached this. I think this was a successful offseason. If you go back to January and February, we were talking that maybe they might not even make any high-impact moves. I think they went out. They spent a ton of Robert Kraft's money. They improved this roster, I think, in some meaningful ways. I think they had a productive draft, which we'll get to. Overall, I think this is going to be a better team in 26 than they were in 25.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't disagree at all. When you talk about the talent and looking at this team on paper, they definitely improved the roster both through free agency and in the draft, right? You know, made some upgrades and filled some gaps in some much-needed positions. Where I come in on this is that I think the team is a better team on paper, but I look at what made last year's team successful, and it wasn't necessarily, at least in my opinion, their talent. It was their culture. It was their leadership. It was their toughness. And you ship some names out of town, right, who I think were big contributors to last year's success in terms of, you know, the locker room presence, the culture, the leadership, the toughness, all those things, right, the intangibles. So I think this is going to be a better team on paper this year. I just hope that they didn't lose some of what made them overachieve, in my opinion.
So who are you worried about that they lost?
Well, you know, look, I think I know Stephon Diggs is a ticking time bomb, but I think he was the heart and soul of that team. I think he was the leader. I think, you know, you lost some guys like Kalyvon Chaisson, who was pretty big in the defensive side, Kyrus Tonga, Jalen Hawkins. Like, you lost some key players that I think really made a difference in that locker room and on the field. I just think that, you know, I'm looking across this team and I'm waiting to see who steps up and fills the role of leader. And that to me is what the issue is. I see some guys that I perceived as leaders last year leave, and I don't exactly know who's ready to step up and fill those shoes.
You know, of all those guys that you just mentioned, the only one that I would say I'm even slightly concerned about the fact that they lost is actually Kyrus Tonga, because I thought he was such a huge part of the run defense, and just filling that role, which is such an important role for this team. Like, Diggs, I don't think he was that good in the last 8 to 10 weeks of the year. I think he's way past his prime. No one else has signed him. That should tell you something.
Yeah.
Chaisson, look, he had a terrific year with us. Reclaimed first round pick. He's a mercurial guy. I'm totally fine with not paying a guy like that money. I think they brought in a free agent to replace him. They drafted a guy that could replace him. I'm totally cool with that. Ditto Jalen Hawkins, nice player, but I think they upgraded with Byard. So Tonga is the only guy right now that I see that they maybe didn't actively replace. But I also know they have Christian Barmore and Milton Williams in that interior line, and Farmer, whatever his name, the guy they drafted last year. So that's the only one I'm even half worried about is Kyrie's Tonga.
Well, like I said, again, it's not about the talent. I think they're a more talented team this year. I just hope that they're, you know, as glued together and as tough as they were last year. There's no reason to think that they wouldn't be. It's just that to me was the question mark. It wasn't the talent. It was the intangibles.
Yeah, it's the intangibles. And I think when we get into the Vrabel-Rossini stuff in a second too, we can talk about how that might factor into the intangible stuff too, because that could be a potential, you know, thing as well. But I'm telling you right now, again, 10,000 foot view, like I'm looking at this whole thing right now and I think they're a better team. I don't think they're going to have the luck they had last year. I don't think they're going to have the injury luck they had last year. And I think the schedule is way tougher. But I think they're going to be like a 10 or 11 win team. I think they're going to be maybe more of a real Super Bowl contender somehow, paradoxically, than they were last year. And I think they're well positioned to contend in a conference that still looks totally wide open. I really do.
Yeah, I do think it's wide open. You just hit the nail on the head, though. The schedule is tougher, right? Which is to be expected. You're getting a first place schedule now. But you know, I know there's a lot talked about last year's injuries to Will Campbell and Wilson and some of those guys down the stretch that may have led to the offensive line kind of falling apart when you needed it the most. But for the most part, that was a pretty healthy team, right? And so you're exactly right to say that, you know, it would kind of be a miracle, I think, if that team stayed that healthy again this year. Knock on wood, hopefully, you know, that is the case. But chances are they're going to have to withstand losing a guy or two.
They are, Justin, but that's one of the things I like about this offseason is that they have really, I think, added some depth pieces through free agency in the draft that I think they're, are they going to have more injuries? Almost certainly, but I think they are much better equipped with the player development they've gone through now through two off seasons with this regime to withstand a couple injuries. So I think that's one of the things I like about the way they built this roster is they will be able to tolerate injuries better, especially on the offensive line where, let's face it, they were paper thin last year. And now I think they have a little bit of depth there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think between free agency and the draft, they did a good job of bringing in guys who can make an impact and can give them some depth. And they're going to need it because, look, every football team goes through injuries. It's not realistic in the NFL, you know, the type of violent schedule that they play to week in, week out to stay completely healthy during the year. And even when you're a healthy team, you still have injuries, right? Like we consider the Patriots a healthy team last year, and they still lost guys like Spillane, Campbell, Wilson, right? So like, you know, you're going to have to withstand it one way or another, whether it's bad or not as bad as it could be, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. And we say the Patriots were a healthy team last year. Yes, they still had some injuries and they had actually a lot of injuries at the end of the season.
Right.
When they really, in those key spots, AFC Championship game, they were super lucky to win that game. They really shouldn't have won that game. And then of course the Super Bowl, by then they were actually kind of beat up and that lack of depth, I think really was a huge factor in that game. And of course the quarterback was injured. All right, Justin. So let's get into the next subject, which has got to be the Vrabel situation. And I have a couple things to say about this thing. And first of all, I can't believe it's gone on for, I think it's 19 days now, which is just mind blowing to me because the only thing I can compare this to is the Coldplay thing from last summer. And that was like 6 or 7 days.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think maybe because Vrabel and Rossini are famous, this thing has more legs. Look, I've been a denier. I've been a Vrabel Rossini denier this whole time. I've argued it has no relevance. I've argued it's not important. I've dismissed it. It's scandal. It's a personal matter. Why should I care about this? This thing in the last week reached a point where I think every Patriots fan now needs to accept that this thing has relevance and that there is a pathway for this issue to become a football issue in 2026. And it's for the reason you just illustrated, which is that Mike Vrabel, part of his success last year was culture. It was building this locker room. And now that this has become such a thing and it has exploded, and Vrabel was kind of caught in a little bit of a lie at the beginning, and maybe he was cheating on his wife. Maybe he was lying about some things. You know, maybe he was living a double life. Like, yeah. Now we as Patriots fan, I think, have to very rightly and fairly wonder, how is this going to affect that locker room? And how are the young guys in the locker room going to react to this? And what is this going to do to that culture that was such a huge part of their success last year? And that is the thing that I think I'm most concerned about going into 2026. And now I see that how this situation could be actually relevant.
Look, I'm fully convinced, you know, you talked about accepting it. I'm fully convinced that it happened, right? You see some of like the pictures and reports dating back even like 6 years ago, right? This has been a long time ongoing thing. Obviously, it comes to a head with these photos that surfaced in Arizona a few weeks ago. No part of me is denying it at this point, right? I think it happened. I think they both cheated on this significant others. They've been carrying out some sort of long-term relationship. And for that, you know, that's scumbag behavior, and they're both going to have to face the music when it comes to their friends, their family, their community, right? Because they definitely, you know, did themselves and their loved ones dirty, right? By the same token, let's be realistic, right? This is the NFL. These are professional athletes. Like, I'm not glorifying it, but like, let's just call it what it is. Like, the majority of the guys in that locker room have a new girl every week, have mistresses, have multiple girlfriends. Like, they're professional athletes in the NFL. You look at some of these documentaries, like the 80s and 90s Cowboys, like the constant stories that you hear from, like, not just football, but all sorts of professional sports. Like, let's not pretend like this guy, you know, cheating on his wife, as bad as that is. And I think it's a horrible act. I think it's total scumbag behavior. I cannot see a world where that all of a sudden he loses the respect of a bunch of guys in the football locker room. Like, that's just the sad reality of the situation.
I hope you're right. I really do. But I just feel like, look, there's 53 guys in that locker room, and you don't know. I mean, yes, a lot of them probably do have mistresses and girlfriends, but do all of them? Now, I tend to agree with you that by the time training camp comes around, this is all going to be forgotten and irrelevant. I really do. But I'm just saying, like, I can see a pathway where this could eventually affect the culture of the team. I'm not saying I think that's actually what's going to happen, but that's why I think we should be at least realistic, or like accepting of the fact that this thing is growing to the point where now there is the potential to have an impact, and hopefully it won't.
Can I tell you the only way I see it impacting the team is,
yes, please.
The only way I see this impacting the team is if he lies to them and denies it to them and basically ruins his trust and credibility with them. I think if he comes out to them and says, guys, look, I made a mistake. I'm dealing with some stuff in my personal life. Okay. But that doesn't affect, you know, how I coach, how I show up to work every day, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think these guys are going to be able to get over the fact that Vrabel had some infidelity in his personal life, right? If he shows up to camp and shows up in the locker room and is deny, hey, they're out to get me, this never happened. And these guys are sitting there going, dude, the evidence is overwhelming. We know it happened. Why are you lying to our faces? That's where I think it becomes a problem.
Yeah, but you know what, just to push back at that a little, he kind of did do that at first. And I'm not saying I blame him. Like, yeah. Look, Mike Vrabel doesn't owe you, me, or anyone else besides his family and the people in his personal life an honest explanation for what he did.
Yeah.
So when I don't blame Mike Vrabel for lying at the beginning of this personally, I don't blame him for lying, because I never should have knew about this. You should have never knew about this.
Right.
Like, the only person that I think that really did anything dishonest or wrong here is the person that sold the photographs. Vrabel might have done something dishonest too, but you know what I mean? Like, I think it's a total scumbag move to out someone. And we don't know what the situation is like in either marriage.
Sure.
And there are people that have extramarital affairs, and there's a million ways to skin a cat. We don't know what Vrabel and his spouse, and Rossini and her spouse, what they agree on, what the terms of their marriage are.
Sure. Yeah. If
there's tacit acceptance or approval of this, there's different things that people have and different ways people have their marriages. So I don't know if he had an extramarital affair, if that was definitely necessarily wrong. But I think what the person did that sold the photographs was 100% objectively a scumbag move to out people like that. And they might get sued for it, by the way.
Yeah.
So, but you just don't know like how these young guys are going to, how that's going to hit them. I mean, that's a totally different matter.
It is. Look, and again, I'm choosing to take, you know, take the stance that I think as long as he's honest with his team, right? And again, he did deny it at the beginning, but that to me, that was less about denying it to his players and more so about like, hey, like he all of a sudden, you know, became a headline overnight and he didn't want
to. He's trying to save his ass in front of his
own
wife.
He's trying to save his ass a little bit. Now that he's caught, the cat's out of the bag, can't really deny it. I think as long as he comes clean with this team, which I think he will, I hope he will, I think, you know, it'll blow over by the time the season comes. I don't think it'll be something that they think twice about. I will say the one thing that's kind of crazy and it's kind of bugging me a little bit, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, because I have a pretty strong opinion on it, is, you know, the people that are saying that he should lose his job and that it's that it's a double standard, that Rossini lost her job and that he hasn't lost his job. I just want to say, Diana Rossini didn't lose her job because she cheated on her husband. She lost her job because her job is predicated on delivering unbiased, objective, fair, and accurate information from around the league. And when you're perceived to have an attachment or favoritism towards a coach or an organization, the credibility and the integrity of your reporting is now in question, right? So I don't think it was like a double standard, like, well, it's okay if a guy cheats, not okay if a girl cheats. Like, I think her job is actually impacted by it. His job, not so much. So I think it's crazy to say that he should lose his job and that it's a double standard that she did and he didn't.
I agree with that 10,000%, Justin, what you said, but I don't even think she should have lost her job. And she didn't
lose her job. She resigned. Right.
She resigned. And her contract was up in June, and she could have potentially weathered the storm. But I think she just said, look, I'm up in June. They're not probably going to resign me. She probably knew that independent of this. Maybe she wasn't coming back or something. Yeah. And she decided to just say, you know what? I'm not going to subject myself to this nonsense.
Sure.
Diana Rossini's career is going to be just fine. Exactly. I truly believe that. She's an excellent reporter.
Yeah.
She's always been an excellent reporter. She's going to recover from this. Someone's going to hire her. And actually, she in some way is going to have a bigger name and more street credibility and more of a voice now than she's ever had once this whole thing kind of blows over. But in my opinion, she should have never lost her job. But I agree with what you said, you know, like she, you know, her being kind of forced to resign, it is more of an issue given the ethical and professional demands of a journalist is why it kind of becomes a small issue for her. But I wish she stuck to her guns and did not resign, because I think that, you know, she absolutely should not have lost her job over this situation.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I don't think she should have lost her job.
Right.
I just think the circumstances surrounding her job is different than the circumstances surrounding Vrabel's, just the nature of it.
And you're 1,000% right about that. And it's funny because like one of my things I've thought this whole time is like, look, I don't blame them for lying, because I think they were trying to cover their asses and no one deserved the truth because it was their personal business.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily even blame them for having an affair, again, because nobody knows the situation, right? So it's not fair to judge. But I think it is so unethical that people in the media have exploited this situation to create content in the name of self-promotion. Like that to me is objectively unethical. Like I can see what Vrabel and Rossini did in morally ambiguous terms. It's kind of like a gray area. We don't know the details. We shouldn't judge. And you know, everything they did, I could say that about, but I look at these kind of sleaze bags in the media who are like making a name for themselves off the situation, using this, exploiting it, manipulating, distorting it to create content, to build their own reputation and to judge them. And I think that is just so unethical.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? And unfortunately, I feel like that's in a large part what a lot of today's media has become, right? There's a lot of exploitation. There's a lot of like kicking people when they're down. And I think just this just kind of fell into that pattern where, you know, look, like even negative publicity sometimes is the best publicity, and headlines sell. And this was something that people were interested in. The headlines, like, you know, they caught like wildfire, and you got people jumping on the bandwagon, trying to get, trying to go viral, trying to get followers, trying to get their name, you know, recognized. Right. And it's just kind of the nature of the beast in today's like media climate. It is shameless.
And like the irony of it all, that people would say that what Vrabel and Rossini did is unethical. And I'm like, isn't it unethical to take events out of context, present them to the public with not knowing all the details and the name of self-promotion? That's right. Like the definition of unethical in my book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like you said, like, you know, some people, like, I feel like nowadays, like the whole, like, you know, open marriage and all this stuff, it's like, it's kind of common. Right. It's becoming more common, I would say.
Which is like the so-called Irish divorce. Like people, they stay in the marriage for the kids, and they know the partner has a side relationship with someone, and they don't care because they don't want to upset the boat. And it's like, people just accept. I mean, who am I to judge?
Yes.
You know, I'm not, my marriage isn't like that, but I'm not judging other people, you know?
Exactly. But funny enough, that's like the one question that I haven't heard anybody ask in the media.
Right.
It's like nobody, everyone's just assuming this was like the worst of the worst situation and playing that up because that's what gets the most, that's what generates the most buzz.
You just hit the nail on the head. They're not assuming it. They're just exploiting it because they know that's what gets the most buzz.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that there could be a million explanations for why this happened between the two of them. But the one that's going to sell to the public and get the clicks and get people to watch and make scandal is the one you just hit on. And that's why some of these people run. And I think that is super, super sketchy by some of the people. Yeah.
It's also interesting too. You know, you see some of the photo, like for instance, do you see the video, not the video, but the photo, a couple of photos of them in like the Tribeca bar in New York from like six years ago, right?
7 years ago.
Yeah, 7 exactly. And I think, and it's like I had never seen that. That never saw the light of day until a situation like this presented itself. So you wonder, like, you know, what was out there and who had what information and who was just kind of sitting on it. And then this kind of just opened up a whole can of worms. And all of a sudden you're seeing stuff that it's existed for years, but nobody knew about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's just it. Now everyone is like, you know, exploiting the situation. People that maybe saw them in the past are now using that as an opportunity. I mean, I think what's really interesting is that there was a story yesterday that the person that originally leaked these photos could get sued. So they probably made like $10,000 off this, and they might end up in like a multi-million-dollar lawsuit. Yeah. So, you know, be careful what you do. You know, you try to screw someone or something like that. It could totally blow up in your face. And I think that would be really interesting to see. All right, one more angle on this, and then we're going to move on to the draft because we got to get to the draft, which is, and this is another angle where this becomes relevant. What did you think about Vrabel stepping down for the last day of the draft, Justin? Because, you know, I got to say, that was another thing I hated. I just didn't see what the point was. I mean, was it just window dressing to appease the wolves on social media? Like, what is the point of Mike Vrabel not participating in day three of the draft? It's Monday, we're recording this. Yeah. He's already back with the team today. So why did he miss a day of the draft? I just felt like that was a weird, weird twist on this that makes absolutely no sense.
It didn't make any sense. Like, to me, that was just pure like PR crisis management, like spin mode by the Patriots. Cause like if he really needed it, you know, were you going to wait for day one and day two to be over and then go get the help that you need? Right. So like, I think it was just totally kind of like a superficial way of being able to say like, oh, he's taking time away from the team. He's missing something important to like prioritize his family and rectify, you know, the situation. But in reality, I think it was just totally a publicity stunt. I don't think he spent Saturday or whatever it was with, you know, with the therapist. He was probably in his car down the street with the cell phone, you know, sending texts and making, you know, telling the page exactly, you know, so it is what it is, but I don't think there was any like brevity to it, to be honest.
It is funny that like those guys drafted now, on the third day, like they're going to have a bullseye on their back. Like if the Patriots come away and totally whiff on all those picks, you know, this is going to be something that, and they're late day picks. So realistically, they didn't pick in the fourth round. They didn't pick till the fifth round. So you would typically most years, you're probably not going to get a player, you know, from 5, 6, and 7 in the draft. But some years you might. But if those guys all miss, it's going to be something that comes up. Okay, absolute last question on this very quickly. Is Mike Vrabel's job safe, Justin? Will Mike Vrabel 100% be the coach of the New England Patriots this July when training camp opens, this September when they kick off the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was the coach of the year last year. He led them to a Super Bowl. This is just a blimp in his personal life. This is not going to affect his ability to be a good coach or lead the team. I expect it to be, you know, at least in the locker room, water under the bridge by the time the season starts. I'm sure there'll still be rumblings and people will try to be resuscitating the rumors and keeping them alive in the media. But I think as far as the team's concerned, they're ready to move past it.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. Vrabel's job is 100% safe. There's 0% chance he's not the coach of this team next fall. People will forget about this. There will be 1,000 stories between now and July, now in September. No one is going to be thinking about this. It feels like a huge thing now. It will be a distant memory by the time the season starts. That's how it happens now. Yeah. And I mean, and the reality is he'll be the coach of this football team. Now, will there be an issue in the locker room? My guess is no, there won't. I'm with you on that one. I'll be watching for those subtle signs. I will be watching for them in the summer and fall. But I think by the time we get to July and the opening of training camp, I really believe most likely this all blows over and it's just kind of like a blimp, really. Yeah,
exactly. On the radar. I agree.
All right, let's get into this draft, man. I'll pass the baton right to you. We got a lot to talk about. Productive draft class, or maybe not based on your opinion, but what are your thoughts on this draft class going tackle first, the players they brought in? What do you want to tell me, Justin, about this draft class?
So I did like this draft. I think, this is my three takeaways from the draft. The first takeaway is that this team understands where their holes are and their weaknesses, and they were actively working to address them, right? Whether that's depth in general, edge, offensive line, tight end. Like, I think this team understood and they went out with the mission to address those needs. So they were self-aware in this draft. The second takeaway from the draft is that while they may say they're committed to Will Campbell, they are certainly giving themselves the flexibility to not be caught with their pants down, right? Whether it's injury, poor performance, whatever it is, they are making sure they have all tools available at their disposal. And my third takeaway from this is that this all but confirms for me that AJ Brown will be a Patriot after June 1st, because they did not go out and address the receiver position. They had a chance a few times to do so. And we know that it was kind of a need. And the fact that they didn't, I think, just confirms all of the rumors that he's going to make his way over to New England.
Let's get into all that, because I agree with all your takes. And I want to start with the Will Campbell one, because that's my number one take from this draft, is that for a team that has publicly said that Will Campbell is the left tackle of this team multiple times at pretty much every opportunity they've been able to over the last couple months, they have loaded this roster with backup options in case Will Campbell doesn't work out. Yep. And I do take them at their word. They are going to give Will Campbell the chance. It is going to be his job in training camp, and it probably will be his job when the season kicks off in September. But you better believe actions speak louder than words. And look at this roster, the way it's built. They've got backup opportunities on their backup plans on their backup plans if Will Campbell crashes and burns. So they drafted a tackle. They've got a when you still on the roster, they drafted another tackle in the sixth round. They have Morgan Moses still on this roster. So they're preparing for the contingency that if Will Campbell is in fact not a left tackle at the pro level, they're not going to leave Drake May exposed. And I love that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'm glad they did it. I love the fact that they can show confidence in Campbell without it being blind confidence, right? They can say, hey, look, you're our guy, but we're not just going to give you the keys to the kingdom and let you get away with murder. Right. Totally. If we need to right the ship and rectify the situation. The other thing I'll say too is, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about it being an indictment on the Campbell situation. And I totally think it is, but let's not forget too, that your right tackle is a 35-year-old that's on borrowed time. You know, I think it was lucky to be as healthy as he was last year. And so, whether it's preparing for Will Campbell to not be as good as maybe we hoped he would be, or whether that's preparing for somebody like Morgan Moses to bow out, you know, either through injury or retirement in the next year or so, I think they were covering their bases and saying, hey, we need to have a plethora of tackles. And that's what they did. They backed it up in the first round. They got a guy in the sixth round who I actually have some hope for is being serviceable if they need him. And again, you got two guards who can step out and play tackle if needed as well. So yeah,
exactly. And Ben Brown, I believe, has played tackle before too, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah,
they've got a lot of options. But what's interesting about the Caleb Lomu pick, Justin, is that he was, I think, exclusively a left tackle last year.
Yep.
He did not play any right tackle.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm sure they are looking at him and saying he will fill Morgan Moses' shoes with Moses. I mean, what are the odds Moses is going to make it through the season without getting hurt? That was one of the lucky things that happened, last year. But, you know, at the other side of the coin, like, the kid is a left tackle. And I think that is a commodity that is hard to find. They've now drafted a first-round left tackle. It's so clear that this is a backup plan for Will Campbell, in my opinion, if he doesn't work out.
It is. And you know what? Look, Will Campbell very well may wind up being better suited as a right tackle or as a guard. And it's, look, at this point, it's spilt milk. You took him with the fourth overall pick last year. It is what it is. All I care about is you seem to have potentially the franchise quarterback, the guy who's going to be under center for the next 10, 15 years. Let's do everything we can to keep him healthy and to keep him upright. And if that takes eating a little bit of crow and saying, hey, look, we took this guy at the fourth pick last year, it's not panning out and we need to pivot, so be it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one of the things I love about this draft and about the approach to the offseason in general is the fact that they clearly have made it a priority to build a stronger offensive line. And I think that's so critical for Drake May, because we saw last year what Drake May was able to do. The pass protection last year was not always great. I mean, that was kind of one of the Achilles heels of this team. You know, look, I'm thinking back to Myles Garrett, obviously the Super Bowl, the playoffs. The pass protection was very sporadic last season. So I think bringing in Elijah Vera Tucker, drafting this kid in the first round, a couple other lines they brought in, it's going to allow you to move the center, the guard back to center. Like, you know, protecting Drake May, I think, is just so critical to the future of this franchise. And I love the fact that two of their biggest moves in this offseason were to make this offensive line better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love it. It's they're putting their attention there and they're making moves. They're not just putting blind trust in the fact that he was a fourth round pick and he's going to pan out. One quick interesting thing, just side note on Will Campbell, which I thought was kind of interesting, is because we've talked a lot last year about how he doesn't seem to be like a physically dominating presence, right? Like, he's not like your physical prototype for what you think of when you think of left tackle in this league, right? Some of these dominant monsters, when you see like a Joe Alt or a Trent Williams, some of these guys that are just absolute behemoths, right? And one of my buddies flew down this past weekend to New Orleans, and Will Campbell was on his flight. And he texted the group and he said, you know, he's about my size. He's like 6'2", 6'3". And, you know, he said, Will Campbell is not as big as they're listing him. Because I looked it up after. Will Campbell's listed at 6'6", 320. I said, well, he's listed. And I texted back. I said, well, he's listed at 6'6", 320. And he said, that guy is not 6'6", 320. He was standing right in front of me. He's more like our size. He goes, I was baffled standing next to him to see what he was like physically. So I don't know. Take that for what you will, but that's, I think that kind of feeds into the lore of the Will Campbell maybe being a little undersized. It's going
to
be really
super interesting to see if Campbell ends up at guard this year.
Yeah.
And as much as they said what they said, and outwardly they've said he's the left tackle, like, as we said, they have clearly prepared for the possibility that he might be better suited as a guard. And look, I give them credit, like you said, organizationally, for having the guts to say, look, we're not going to throw bad money after you. We're not going to chase a mistake. Like, let's prepare for this. Maybe we've had a good look at this kid. Maybe he is a better guard than, or maybe he's a better right tackle than a left. And let's prepare for that eventuality and not, you know, double down on what maybe was not a great draft pick.
Exactly. And it sounds like they're prepared to do that. And really, that's all I can ask for. I agree. You got to give him a chance. He obviously played through an injury that probably would have sidelined most guys for the rest of the season. So I do think we have to keep that into consideration, but I want to see a healthy Campbell in year two, make that step. And if he doesn't take that next step, they're prepared to switch gears.
all eyes are going to be on this kid. I mean, as much as any lineman that's played here in a long, long, long time, everyone's going to be watching Will Campbell. Everyone's going to become an expert on tackle play. All right, let's talk about AJ Brown. You hit on that too. I agree with you. I think all of us agree on that, that the, you know, everything that happened in this draft this weekend is telling us that AJ Brown is going to be a Patriot. And that's not just in New England. That's also in Philadelphia, right? They've drafted a receiver. They also signed receivers in free agency, or traded for a receiver. Yeah. And then Patriots don't draft a receiver in an extremely deep receiver class. You look at this roster, and if there's one hole left, I think, on this roster, it is probably that number one type wide receiver. I don't know if AJ Brown is still that, but I think Mike Vrabel believes that he is. And my take on this, Justin, is that I agree with you. You know, AJ Brown will be a Patriot after June 1st. And whether I like that or not, to me, is going to totally depend on the price. I don't think the Eagles have much leverage in this situation with that cap number, that locker room situation, and AJ Brown's knee. I don't think there's a lot of people that want him. So I'm going to say something that you may think is crazy, but I don't think AJ Brown is worth more than a third round pick. And I think the Patriots are going to trade probably a third, maybe a conditional second for this guy. And to me, that would be a very fair price based on what the market is for him.
Yeah, I would 100% welcome AJ Brown and see if he, you know, can kind of have a part two of his career here in New England. But it's got to be for the right price. A first round pick, I'm totally out on that. If it involves giving up any sort of young asset or valuable asset that the Patriots have accumulated, like as far as player capital, I'm out on that as well. Like you said,
what about Kayshon Booty? Does that count? Does he count?
Listen, I that to me is where it gets tricky, because I'm in the minority of people, and I know I'm in the minority of people.
You're very high on Booty. I know that.
That is extremely high on Booty, to the point where if I was wearing the crown, if I was the decision maker, I would rather Booty be a starting receiver next year than AJ Brown at this point in his career, given his attitude, given his knee, given his drop in production. And I know I'm in the minority. I know that's an unpopular opinion. So I'm probably not the right person to ask that, but I could see Booty in a third being kind of the asking price, or Booty in a second.
Yeah, I mean, his name, Booty's name, has come up a lot in some of these trade talks. So I don't know if that's what the price is going to be, but you know, in terms of draft capital, I'm 100% with you. No way are they giving up a first round pick, nor should they. Better to walk away from the deal. And I would even say a second round pick, if they were to give it, it has to be conditionally protected, meaning that if they make the playoffs, it's a second, but if they don't make the playoffs, it's a third. Like, I don't want Drake May to get hurt this year, you know, forbid that, but if it does happen and the Patriots get like the 35th, the 36th pick or something like that and have a bad year, and then have to give that up for an aging AJ Brown with a bum knee, you know, who will be a year older going into 2027. So I don't think that would be a good deal. So I think maybe a protected second round pick might be able to twist my arm into that, but I really think if you look at it, I mean, a third round pick feels like appropriate for where this guy is right now and what the lack of market was for him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, I know he's been tied to New England. I know the Patriots kind of want him, but the fact that nobody else really swept in and made an offer that you know, the Eagles couldn't refuse, I think that also speaks volumes, you know?
Yep. And there's a lot of teams out there that could still use a wide receiver. I mean, you think of teams like, you know, Kansas City. I know the Rams were looking at him, you know, and nobody wants the guy. And I think it's not because he's a bad player. It's because people see that he's on the decline of his career. He has a bad knee. And I think Vrabel values him more and feels like he can get more from him than probably other coaches and GMs do. Right. And that's why he's even willing to probably give a little more. And, you know, we'll see what that compensation is. But to me, and it sounds like you're on the same page, there's really no doubt he's coming here after June 1st, barring something crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And look, hopefully he comes in and he's reminiscent of the young AJ Brown and Vrabel, who they both have a lot of respect for one another, right? Dating back to Tennessee. Hopefully he's able to get the best out of him. He's not a problem in the locker room. That would be fantastic. And I hope it works out well. But again, I have my doubts. It needs to be for the right price. I don't want to, you know, live and die by this AJ Brown trade.
Agreed. And let me say, when I say my prediction, 10 or 11 wins, that's not counting on getting anything from AJ Brown.
Yeah.
That's just who this team as is right now. Now, if they hit the lottery and it turns out AJ Brown is still a number one receiver, a la Randy Moss or something in 2007, then this team is going to do better than 10 or 11 wins.
Yes, for sure. If AJ Brown comes here and is healthy and has a fire under him and plays really well, the combination of him and Dubs is going to be a big upgrade for this Patriots offense.
Absolutely. Big upgrade. Yeah. Big upgrade. But wait and see. When this trade happens, the talk is going to be around the league. I can't believe how low the price was.
Yeah.
Because I really believe the value just isn't there. All right, let's go around the league. Let's talk about some of the other teams in the draft. I'm just going to throw a few out there, and then if you have anything you want to add, by all means, chime in. But I'm going to start at the top of the draft, Justin. And I want to talk about the New York Jets. They picked number two. They picked three picks in the first round of this draft. I'm not saying I don't like what they did. I like what they did. But what I am saying is I'm not sure I can ever remember a team that made three first round picks and somehow moved the needle less for themselves than the New York Jets did. Yeah. Everyone I've heard so much this week say, oh, they're setting themselves up for a quarterback in 27. They're setting themselves up for 27. Haven't we learned you can't play the long game that far ahead? Okay. Nobody knows who's going to be, if there even is going to be a quarterback that's coveted in 2027. And the fact of the matter is the New York Jets have turned themselves in from like a 3 or 4 win team to like a 6 or 7 win team.
Yeah.
And they're going to put themselves into the middle of the first round next year. And I'm sorry, commit themselves to a lifetime of mediocrity. They're stuck with Aaron Glenn. They're a mediocre team. I think they remain a franchise going absolutely nowhere, even if they hit on these picks.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Look, this year, I'm kind of writing them off. I don't think they're going to have much at quarterback. I think their defense might be a little bit better. You know, I know they drafted that kid Omar Cooper, the wide receiver from Indiana, to pair with what's his name over Garrett Wilson. Yeah. So, look, they have made improvements, but I am just not worried about this team whatsoever. And one of those reasons is because I just think Aaron Glenn is an absolute clown show. And I just feel like a team that's coached by Aaron Glenn that doesn't have a quarterback, it doesn't really matter who else is in the roster.
Exactly. And like, look, we had a discussion about this in January, and I said at the time, fire Aaron Glenn. Don't carry him into 2026. And that was absolutely the right thing that they should have done, because look what happens with this draft. This was a draft that was done with Aaron Glenn saving his job in mind. Everything they've done this offseason has been about making the Jets a respectable team. Instead of rebuilding them into a team that may actually compete for something or do something, everything is about just saving Aaron Glenn's job. And I think it was a huge mistake to bring Glenn back. I think this draft reeked of a coach and a GM and an administration that was desperate to try and be good enough to buy themselves another year. And I think they made mistakes organizationally, big picture wise, that will ultimately push back the rebuild that we've been watching for 50 years back a few more years, at least.
I agree. And the irony of it all is that, you know, you have a market like New York, which is a really, you know, coveted top tier sports market. And you had maybe the best grouping of coaches on the market and available, I think, heading into this past offseason that I've seen in a long time. You know, you had guys like Harbaugh, Stefanski, you know, Tomlin got let go, and a few others. And you're in control of a big market like New York that has a ton of draft capital after the Sauce Gardner trade and whatnot. And it's just, they had a total chance to push the reset button and put themselves in a great situation. And they just, in classic Jets fashion, blew it and made the wrong decision.
I really think they did. I really think they did. I think you're going to see them picking somewhere around like 7 to 12 next year.
Yeah.
And who knows if that will get them the quarterback, but that's not always a great place to be to do that. All right, next one, the Arizona Cardinals, Justin. I'm not sure, and I tried to think about it this week. I'm not sure if I can remember a draft pick I hated more than the Jeremiah Love pick to Arizona. I love Jeremiah Love.
Yeah.
He's not the problem. I just hate him in Arizona. Jeremiah Love is the crown jewel. He would have been a great in Kansas City. I could have even bought him in Tennessee to pair up with Cam Ward. But when you're a team that has Jacoby Brissett as your quarterback and you know that you're starting a huge rebuild, drafting a running back does absolutely nothing for you. They're going to waste this kid's prime, and a running back's prime is only a few years in a situation where he has no chance to win. There is no quarterback. It's a total rebuild. I absolutely hated this pick. I think it might be my least favorite draft pick of an NFL franchise in years.
Well, and they already gave him like a guaranteed $50 million contract too, right off the bat.
I
like Jeremiah Love. I think he's a good running back. I think he will be a good running back in the NFL, but
100%.
But to draft him as high as they did, I'm sorry, that's not warranted. I think you had to go back to like Saquon Barkley to find a running back that was drafted that highly. I just think, you know, this Cardinals team. Look, I get it. You know, in theory, they're looking at it now and they're saying, well, you know, we got Marvin Harrison Jr. We got Trey McBride. Now we got Jeremiah Love. And so we got a nice three-headed monster for you know, whatever quarterback wants to come in. I know they drafted Carson Beck, the Miami kid, in, and maybe he'll get a shot. I don't know, man. This wasn't a team that was like, oh, they're a running back away from competing.
How did it work out for the Raiders last year?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did it work out for the Giants when they drafted Saquon Barkley? He right. won a Super Bowl for the Eagles.
Right.
You know, this is exactly what's going to happen with the Cardinals and Jeremiah Love. It is no way an indictment on Jeremiah Love, because he's a terrific player, and he might even move the needle. He might make them from a 3-win team into a 5-win team.
Yeah.
But that's nothing for them. So
yeah.
I think this was just a very short-sighted pick, and they make the pick, and I'm like, you know why teams like Arizona are always picking at the top of the draft? Because they do things like this.
Exactly. Yeah. I like the player. I kind of understand what you're going for. I just don't think it's going to work out, especially too, like this Arizona team. You look at the division they're playing in, like they have the reigning Super Bowl champs. They have arguably the best team in football in the Rams. They have the 49ers, who are perennially competing for a division title and a spot in the playoffs. It's like running back was not going to be the move that got them to elevate and compete and find a way to win that division and make the playoffs. Like, I'm sorry. They took a good player, and I think it's going to be a waste.
110%. Titans next, the pick four after them. Look, I'm a Cam Ward skeptic. I don't know, and I really didn't see much last year to disavow me of that, but I have to say the Carnell Tate Cam Ward pairing, that's a sexy combination, man. Like that's going to be interesting. Like, I don't know if Cam Ward has it, but giving him Carnell Tate, and now you're pairing these two guys up in Tennessee, I think that all of a sudden makes the Titans at least a little interesting.
The Titans to me were interesting ever since they brought in Daboll and Saleh, because I like that head coach OC combination. I like both of those guys. I love the fact that they kind of went out and they were aggressive in free agency. They rebuilt that defense a little bit. And now you go out and you get your quarterback who, let's face it, Cam Ward was not good last year, but he wasn't awful. He wasn't someone that I'm ready to write off yet. And so you go out and you get him a hopeful number one target that he can build a rapport with. You know, you got to at least give your young quarterback a chance. And I think that's what they're doing with Carnell Tate. They're trying to give him some weapons.
100%. And it makes me, I do feel a little, it's kind of a shame that a guy like Carnell Tate wasn't available last year when the Patriots were picking at four. That's the one thing I thought of. I'm like, you know, it's too bad Drake May is still looking for his Carnell Tate. We're talking about trading for AJ Brown. It's a shame that the Patriots didn't have that opportunity. There was not a player like that available in the draft last year. Cam Ward is lucky that he got one. I don't think Cam Ward is anywhere near as good as Drake May, but it's a big piece for this Titans team. Okay, next take. I don't know, just very quick. I thought it was really interesting how the Chiefs traded the cornerback. His name escapes me.
McDuffie.
Yeah. And then went cornerback, right, with this number six pick, trying to play a kind of flip-flop game. I just thought that was an interesting move. They went heavy on defense. They really didn't do much to help Pat Mahomes out. I don't know. What do you think about the Chiefs?
Well, I thought it was an interesting move because clearly they were trying to, like, you know, play the cap game, right? Where they traded away McDuffie and they brought in the number one cornerback in the draft. And they're hopefully saying that, hey, you know, hopefully it won't be too big of a drop off in performance. And we don't have to pay the big price tag for it. But they went out and look, they drafted a cornerback. They drafted an edge. They drafted a D tackle. They are trying to address that defensive side of the ball. And they did it kind of in a way that's smart for that cap. You know, you got Mahomes on that big contract. You know, you got some guys that are due to be paid and that are being paid on, you know, the offensive side of the ball. So I don't hate what they did. I think, to be honest, I don't think Mahomes really needs much more help. I think he's got a good offensive line. They brought in Kenneth Walker, the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, and that's a good signing.
And when, you know, Travis Kelce, even at this stage of his career, is an average tight end. And let's not forget that when healthy, the Xavier Worthy and what's his name? The other guy. The guy who's suspended for six games. Rashee Rice. That's a hell of a combination, you know? So yeah. I think that offense is going to be just fine if they're healthy and Mahomes comes back healthy. We really saw the Chiefs rise to dominance, not only when the offense was good, but when the defense matched the level of that offense. And so 100%. I think that's
not exceeded the last Super Bowl.
Exactly. So I think that's what they're going for.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think this is where Jeremiah Love, by the way, would have been a terrific fit. Terrific fit in Kansas City, especially Mahomes probably missing 6 to 8 games at the start of the season. You put in Love there, you ride him until Mahomes can come back, and then he's there. He can take the pressure off Mahomes as he transitions in and as he gets older. That to me seemed just like a beautiful marriage. And it's a shame Arizona blew it with bad decision making, but you know, they're going to try and ride that defense in Kansas City like they've done the last couple of years. They also went, they had the 29th pick and they took a tackle, Peter Woods out of Clemson, who's also a good prospect. So, you know, they've been winning, if you look at it, for like 3 or 4 years now. Their defense has really been the bread and butter in Kansas City. And that's clearly how they approach this draft. All right. Next one I want to talk about. I'm telling you right now, watch out for the Saints this year. And I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But I think they might have got the most explosive player in the draft in Jordan Tyson. And I know he has a little bit of an injury history. But when I watch this guy run, and I know he's a little smaller than him, the way he runs, the speed, he reminds me of Randy Moss. And I think that they already have Chris Olave on the other side of the ball. And the quarterback, Tyler Shuck, he looked good last year at times. They surrounded him with weapons. Lousy division. I'm just saying, like, that's a potential surprise team this year.
My only problem with that is that, like, unless I'm just not seeing it, the Saints just have so many other holes on that roster. Like, I think I do love the combination of Tyson and Olave. I think that very sneakily can become this year one of the best 1-2 combos in the league. And I agree, the quarterback looked pretty good last year. I just wonder how the rest of the team's going to play out. I feel like that defense has kind of been picked to the bone. You know, the offensive line play wasn't great. Alvin Kamara, I think, is going to retire if he hasn't retired yet. I don't know. I know they brought in Travis Etienne, I think. But I don't know. I just see them having a lot of holes on that roster. But like you said, it's
the 85 Bears, but I'm saying in a weak division,
they could surprise some people.
Eight or nine games, sure. Surprise some people.
Yeah. It wouldn't be like, crazier things have happened for sure.
Exactly. I mean, you know, every year there's like those one or two teams. I mean, look at the Patriots last year, right? Yeah. Where they just come out of nowhere. And I would call the Saints and the Giants both teams that I think are capable of that this year. I do like what the Giants did as well in the draft this year. All right. Let's talk two more quick ones, then we're going to wrap it up. Cowboys. Okay. I love what they're doing in Dallas. I think they drafted the best player in the draft in Caleb Downs.
Yep.
And then the way they built that line, the trades they've made, it seems like the Cowboys have learned from the error of their ways, from sort of the fantasy football mentality where they overinvested in receivers and running backs and all that stuff. They're building their lines. They're drafting a safety. They're rebuilding that defense. I like what the Dallas Cowboys did this offseason.
That is, I don't like it. I love what the Cowboys have done this offseason. I think the Cowboys, The Cowboys are my dark horse NFC team. I've already bet them to win their division. I think they are very sneakily, if they can stay healthy, going to be one of the best teams in football next year. I think Dak Prescott has shown he can play at an MVP level. You got one of the arguably the best 1-2 combination with CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. That offensive line is great, and they've totally rebuilt that defense from top to bottom. Yeah. And I think that's actually going to be a really good defense, which has been one of their big problems the last few years.
And they drafted a pass rusher at 23, too. Don't forget Malachi Lawrence, yes. An edge rusher.
Yep. And they brought in edge rushers. Like that defense, dare I say, could be stacked if they stay healthy. Yeah. So I love what the Cowboys have done. I think the Eagles are due to take a step back. I think the Commanders are – Yeah, I'm not super impressed by them. I like what the Giants have done, but I still think they're a year or two away from being a real threat. Look at the Cowboys to win that division and make a splash in the NFC this year.
I love that call, and I agree. That's a great – I don't know what the odds are. I have to look into that, but that is a great play. I really think that's a great bet. The Cowboys are absolutely poised to be a dark horse team this year. Last one I want to talk about with you, and I'm curious what you think about it, because I think this was kind of the surprise of the first round, and that is the LA Rams taking Ty Simpson with the 13th pick. You know, I don't know what your thoughts on this are. I love this move for the Rams. Really? And one of the reasons I love it is because they already acquired the best player to change teams this offseason was the cornerback Trent McDuffie. I think free agency trades, anything. He was the single best player that changed teams this year. They used their second first round pick to bring him in. That's a huge addition to that defense. They're already one of the best teams in the NFL. And I think they were in a place where they could take a chance on a project quarterback that could be their guy for the next 10 years. So it was an aggressive move. I don't know if I like Ty Simpson, but Sean McVay knows a lot more about football than any of us do. So if Sean McVay thinks this is a good move, I get behind it. I think this was a good move for the Rams.
To be honest, though, I don't think Sean McVay thought it was a good move. Do you see how pissed off he was in that press conference after? I do
you think
not.
So? I heard a little about that.
I do not think Sean McVay liked that move. Listen, I fall on the opposite side of the spectrum here. I think that was the worst pick of the draft. And it's not it's not because I don't think Ty Simpson could potentially be a good quarterback in the future. But I look at this Rams team. This Rams team was, a botched play or two away from winning the NFC last year and going on to the Super Bowl, where they probably would have beat the Patriots. They are in win now mode. This is Stafford's twilight year. They'd be lucky to get a second year out of him after this. They are in win now mode. They are arguably one of the best teams in football. They have a 1 to 2 year window to capitalize. In that quarterback room after Matt Stafford consists of Jimmy Garoppolo, a proven veteran, and Stetson Bennett, who was a national championship winner at Georgia. So I look at this team that is in win now mode, that needs to win now to do everything they can to win in the next year or two. And Ty Simpson does not move that needle one iota. He might be a good quarterback in the future, but I just think it was a blown opportunity given where they're at in terms of winning now, given the quarterback room that they have. It just didn't make a ton of sense to me.
I think they already made a big move in bringing in Trent McDuffie. They had draft capital. And Justin, nobody is better at finding players late in the rounds, later in the draft than the Rams. I mean, they have a track record like no one else. So I think they'll restock that way. And they took a gamble on keeping this thing going. Like, who is the quarterback of the future in Los Angeles? It's not Jimmy Garoppolo. It's definitely not Stetson Bennett. I mean, if Matt Stafford goes and retires this year, that's it. It's over for the Rams, and it's over for McVay unless they get really lucky finding another quarterback. So they took a flyer on this kid that I guess someone likes in the organization. I hope McVay likes him. If McVay doesn't like him, I would agree that I'm totally out on him at that point because I respect McVay's opinion. But I love the aggressive move. We had a similar conversation about the Falcons last year. And by the way, right, 2 years ago when they drafted Michael Penix.
We did.
Penix didn't work out. So maybe that move blew up in Atlanta's face. But I honestly, given how important a quarterback is, I can't fault the Rams for going aggressive after a quarterback.
Well, listen, what I would say to you is go back and watch the clip of Sean McVay at the press conference after sitting next to the GM, right? Okay. And then watch the clip of him at the draft on the phone with Ty Simpson. Tell me that's a guy that wanted to bring Ty Simpson in. I'll say you're crazy, but just go take a look at those two clips.
All right.
And the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, the Rams have gotten away with, you know, having a great two-headed monster the last few years, whether it was Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, then Puka Nacua and Davante Adams. Well, Davante Adams is, you know, at the end of his career, you had a great opportunity to bring in like a Mekhi Lemon and have a great three-headed monster this year that would ensure that the future was bright and you had weapons for Stafford and whatever quarterback came in. I was shocked that they let someone like him go and brought in Simpson. I hope Simpson makes me eat my words. I hope he's a great quarterback in the future. I don't know, but go watch those clips of McVay and tell me what you think.
Yeah, I will. And, you know, I will say, like, I personally don't like Ty Simpson as a quarterback. Dan Orlovsky is obsessed with him. Dan Orlovsky loves him. Like, I look at Ty Simpson and I see a lot of Mac Jones, but I don't really know what I'm looking at. Right? You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, if Les Snead and McVay they're usually in lockstep together.
Yeah.
So if they like him, then, and they put all their chips onto the table for him, then I like that move. But, you know, I will go back and look at the press conference, and if McVay is not on board with that, then that is, I think, something that is worth noting. So this is an interesting move, if nothing else. Like, this is going to be really interesting to see how this works out over 3 to 5 years.
It is, especially if the Rams fall just short like they did last year, because you're going to question some of the playmakers that were available in the mid first round that maybe could have helped, you know, give them some depth or give them a boost. So it'll be very, very interesting. But I did think it was the surprise pick of the draft, in my opinion.
It was absolutely the surprise pick of the draft. All right, my friend, that is all the time we have. I want to thank everybody that took the time to listen to this episode of the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. It's getting to be that time. We got a schedule coming out in a week or two. We'll preview things. We got mini camp. You know, things will start moving now. So hope you follow our page. Keep an eye out for our latest content. And we'll catch you next time with another episode of the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. Be healthy, be well, be safe, everyone. Take care, Justin. Be good.